Welcome to The Extra, a show that connects you with the people, issues, and topics that are important to you in the community, and also broaden our perspective on what's going on globally. Well, today, a troubling case of a double murder in Turkey, a mother and daughter killed in their apartment that some have suspicions may not be the case of a relative angry over a debt, as the official investigation found and the government prosecuted, but instead some attribute to the pair being connected to the women's work of activism and outspoken comments in regards to the civil war in Syria. Let's bring you some background. Hala Berkat was a 24-year-old U.S.-born journalist. Her mother, Aruba Berkat, had appeared on Turkish and Syrian TV channels, often criticizing Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. And this is the subject of a new co-investigation, a collaboration from award-winning nonprofit journalism organization Reveal, from the Center for Investigative Reporting, and ABC News Nightline. And joining us today is one of the multiple journalists who worked on this story, Afghan-American Fariba Nawa, who is living in Istanbul and personally spoke to many of the sources on the story. First of all, thanks, Ms. Nawa, for joining us this morning. It is a difficult process. We had to calculate how you are going to be able to join the show from Istanbul, but I want to just express my deep gratitude that you are able to do so and to shed light on this important story, a case that some might question if justice was really served.
Hi, Shannon. Thank you for having me. Yeah, so we have a big time zone difference, but I'm happy to be here and talk to your community about this story.
And what drew you to investigate this case of Hala and Aruba Berkat? And am I saying the names right, correctly?
Yes, you are. Hala and Aruba Berkat, you are. Hala was an American. Of course, I'm an American. And we were both sort of hyphenated Americans, women, journalists. So even though she was a lot younger than me, I felt connected to her immediately when I heard about the murder. I live on the Asian side of Istanbul, and it's only a few minutes drive from my house where she was killed in her own home. When the first time I saw the announcement was by one of her college friends on Facebook. And then it was a cryptic message. And I immediately contacted her and said, what's going on? Who is Hala? And then she explained that she was trying to be a journalist. She was in her university at the time and had graduated. And then I started to look into it. And immediately suspicions were raised about the circumstances under which they were killed.
And those suspicions were based on what? Because of her work, or did they go beyond that?
Well, it was the way they were killed. The way they were killed, and that's still one of the pieces of the puzzle that's missing, is that the Turkish police and their investigation is saying that it was their cousin. And he did it as a crime of passion. He came to their home. He had some kind of argument over money. And he initially confessed to doing this and then later recanted his confession. But the way that they were killed is these are two pretty strong women, physically and emotionally. And this guy, this cousin, if you see him, he's frail. He doesn't look very strong. But, you know, that's not something to base evidence on. However, nobody heard them scream. He apparently came into their home, which is on the third or second floor of an apartment in a very quiet neighborhood, and first killed Aruba and then Hala with a knife, and then poured detergent around their bodies where there was blood, wrapped them in blankets. And that's not something your average guy who kills in a domestic violence killing does. It was very assassination, what even the Turkish prosecutor's report called slaughter-style killing initially. So that's the first thing that raised suspicion. The second was that Aruba's Twitter account was shortly hacked by loyalists to the Assad regime in Syria. And it's not easy to hack Twitter accounts. And they were able to get in, and a lot of her tweets were deleted. And these women had gotten death threats. In the past, they told friends, we got death threats. trolls had often come in because they were very active in their opposition to the, not just the Assad regime, but also to some of the things that were going on in the opposition itself against the regime.
And let's set the stage a little. Aruba had been a long-time activist. This wasn't something that came about new to her, and she was not an unknown, presence in Syrian politics and the politics of that region.
No, not at all. Their family, the Barakat family, has been in the opposition for the last 40 years. They were exiled early on by Bashar al-Assad's father, Hafez al-Assad. And so this family was familiar with going to prison, being detained, even being tortured. One of the sources that we spoke to, which was Hala's uncle, Ma'in Barakat, he's here in Istanbul, he told me stories of how he was detained every time he went back to Syria. And so the family was familiar with loss. They've lost a lot. Even Suzanne Barakat, who lives in the Bay Area, who's a doctor there, she lost her brother and her sister-in-law in the North Carolina tragedy a few years ago. If you guys recall, there was a hate crime, and a white man shot them dead over apparently some kind of parking dispute. So this family, they're no strangers to tragedy, but in terms of politics, they've been. And they've been very active in voicing their dissent against injustice, against the extrajudicial killings in Syria, against the torture that happens in prisons. And in particular, of question here was the work that Aruba had told others she was doing on Saidnaya prison. It's a notorious prison that's been written about in the U.S. and referred to by Congress in America, and how detainees are regularly tortured. Apparently there was a cremation there to get rid of bodies, and Aruba had deep contacts inside these prisons.
And we should mention, she gave birth to Hala on U.S. soil. So Hala is a U.S. citizen whose death resulted in Turkey, took place in Turkey. But as you've been mentioning, your investigation points out maybe not properly investigated, not deeply investigated, or maybe... there was some, misinformation presented in that investigation.
Well, yeah, there's just a lot of discrepancies. First of all, the protocol in Turkey is Turkey does not let other countries come and investigate on its soil unless it's in their interest, like they did in the Jamal Khashoggi case, the Saudi dissident who was killed here in the Saudi embassy in Istanbul. Most of your listeners probably heard of that. That was sort of reverberated worldwide because Khashoggi had very powerful friends in Washington. He was a dissident. He was very connected to the media and diplomats. But Hala was just a rising star of a 24-year-old kid who wanted to be a journalist. But she was an American. Khashoggi was not. And this story got brushed under the rug by both governments, the Turkish and the American government. At the time, relations between the two sides, this happened in 2017, were not the best. There was a visa ban on both sides. There was an American pastor who was imprisoned in Turkey on espionage charges. He was later released. So things were tense, and nobody really wanted to touch this. The Turks told the FBI, we've got this. This is our turf. And the FBI just kind of backed off. They didn't push. And the international media really failed they took the Turkish narrative as fact because it was so quick. These women were killed. A week later, the cousin was arrested. There was a funeral, and that's it. And they had the one thing that was really damning in the evidence is the DNA that they found under his fingernails belonged to the mother, belonged to Aruba. However, the reports are contradictory. In the police report, there's DNA, but in the autopsy report, there's no foreign DNA.
At all.
So that was the first, so that was the first thing that while doing this, this 2-year-long investigation with the team that I did, I was the lead investigator in Istanbul on the ground, that we just kind of, we had an aha moment, like, wait, it's not just the way that they were killed, but here's actual discrepancies in the report, in the prosecutor's report. We were able to obtain that. And that was really hard to do, just so you know. In public records here, you don't just go to the court and get public records. It's a different system. Only parties to that case have access to it and the attorneys involved. The family was able to get this through a lot of finagling, and then we were able to get copies. This 800 page report, which we poured over page by page, translated, and went over some of the things that didn't make sense to us. And one of them was, why would one report say there was DNA and the other report says there's no DNA?
Well, and we should mention this is a result of a collaboration between ABC News, your investigation is, and Reveal, which is part of the Center for Investigative Reporting. Now, the Nightline report has aired already on ABC. It's called Justice for Hala, but there is also a podcast that people can listen to. So we are previewing or giving you an umbrella view of what is contained within that podcast. We need to take a short break, Fariba. When we come back, we will be continuing the discussion with Afghan-American journalist Fariba Nawa, who participated in this, as she mentioned, a two-year-long investigation that has resulted in this collaborative report that aired on ABC's Nightline. You're listening to The Extra on KRDO News Radio. And welcome back to The Extra, the show connecting you with the issues, topics, and people that are important to you. And today we are talking about a very important investigation that ABC News conducted in collaboration with Reveal, part of the Center for Journalism. And we have on the phone right now joining us Fariba Nawa, who is an Afghan-American journalist who participated in this investigation, was really instrumental, it sounds like, in gathering some of the interviews that helped form the basis of this investigation into Hala. Justice for Hala is the name of the investigation. Hala Barakat and her mother, Aruba Barakat, were involved in dangerous work. Hala was a journalist, her mother an activist, both critical of what had been going on in Syria's civil war. And Fariba, you talked just moments ago about the DNA that was the DNA information that was contained in police reports, that there was some contradictions. Could it be just sloppy police work, or do you think there was more to it?
It's hard to say. I mean, it's hard to say. All this time we've reached out to the Turkish government to try to give us an answer. I was able to talk to the police for another story that I wrote in 2017, that we had a meeting, and it was a really interesting interaction, because I was used to working with police in America, where you get police reports, you could do an interview, and then they give you their name. And here it's not like that. They said we don't give our names, and we don't give that. There's no the transparency like that doesn't exist. Don't expect it from us. But we can tell you generally what happened, and you can say, according to the police. And that was the last time I got to see them. And they gave the story that, you know, that sort of the narrative that they have been giving all along, which is that it was sort of a cut and dry case and there was not much to it because, hey, we got a confession. It seems from what looking at the reports is that they did order all of the things that they needed to. First of all, the Turkish police have the technology and the know-how to do what they need to do, as we saw with the Khashoggi case, just like the U.S. It's not like they're behind on technology at all or expertise. They have what it takes to do a proper investigation. But what happened in this case is they had ordered, there was a call to look into their social media and to the women's social media and see what evidence they could find. Footprints in the place. There were supposed to be three sets of footprints. There was blood analysis, but it seems like a lot of things, there was no follow-through. Mm-hmm. When you look at the report, right after the cousin, Ahmed Barakat, confesses, then they just stop. And then what's weird and not protocol here is that the family was never invited to testify in the trial or be a part of the trial.
Not even.
I can't say it was a secret.
Really, not even to stand by and make some sort of victim impact statement? That's usually what's allowed, at least at the sentencing phase.
Yes, exactly. And they have that here as well. But no, they were not. They were not allowed. And I don't know if they were not allowed. They were not informed. And that's just very unusual. What we've been able to show successfully is that there has been gross neglect from the Turks, as well as the Americans, in handling this murder of an American journalist, essentially. and a Syrian activist, the mom. But what we were not able to do really was find out if Ahmed Berkat was the killer and if he was the only one. I mean, that is still an ongoing thing that I might dig deeper in because I'm here on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to say because really there were just so many holes. Why wasn't the family invited? Femicides or violence against women is pretty big here in Turkey, and it's not unusual. But there is a very strong feminist movement here as well that make sure that the family is invited to these court hearings, and that sentences are carried out. Even if this was a domestic violence killing, why wasn't the family invited? So that's also like what went wrong? Why are there so many questions?
The prosecution handled it very differently in that respect, at least, it sounds like.
Yes, they did. They did. We called the prosecutor who wrote the report. He denied writing the report. He refused to talk to us. The only person from the government that was given permission to talk to us was the court translator. And the court translator is interesting because the convicted killer, he's in prison right now. The cousin of the Berkats does not speak Turkish. He speaks Arabic. It's a different language. Mm-hmm. And the court translator speaks both languages. He's an Iraqi, now Turkish citizen. And we spoke to him, and he told us that, yes, Ahmed Berkat did do it. He confessed to it. But Ahmed Berkat, the convicted killer, appealed his sentencing and said that the translator had coerced him into confessing or had convinced him. Now, our speculation is that the translator probably told him, if you confess, you'll get a plea deal. But Ahmed Berkat doesn't understand things like plea deals and legal formalities. And he just thought, okay, maybe if I say I did it, they'll let me off the hook. I don't really know what was in his mind, but there has been this in the media, in the Turkish media, as well as when we interviewed him in prison through a lawyer. He told us that, first of all, he didn't do it and he knows nothing about it, and that the translator misdirected him to confess.
Oh,
but it's hard to believe that Ahmed Berkat is completely innocent. I mean, there's just too much evidence. He was seen on CCTV footage that he was going to the women's house, coming out of their house, that he was around the neighborhood at the time. And the police used that as evidence against him, and then whatever DNA that they were able to get or not get. But there's no motive. That's what's missing. There's no reason why he would kill them. Uruba was the only one helping him. And this is a guy that had just come out of Syria. He was part of the opposition. He was one of their fighters. He's also very young. And she gave him a job just to get him through.
Why would he turn
make sure he
on
had
her? Right.
Yeah. Why would it makes no sense.
An intriguing story with layers upon layers. We are peeling back some of the layers. Something that if you want to learn more, you should listen to the podcast. We need to take a short break. Fariba Nawa, African-American journalist who worked on this story, is currently living in Istanbul, is joining us by phone from Turkey. We're going to continue the conversation. When we come back, we want to talk about Agnes Kalamard. I think I said her name right, a UN
yes.
special reporter on extrajudicial summary or arbitrary executions for the UN. We're going to talk about statements that Agnes has made. That's coming up when The Extra continues after these commercial messages. Welcome back to The Extra. We are deep into an engrossing conversation with African-American Fariba Nawa, a journalist who took part in a two-year-long investigation that is the subject of a reports out by ABC News, as well as Reveal from the Center of Investigative Reporting. And the Nightline report has already aired. It's called Justice for Hala Berkat and her mother were murdered in Turkey, just as you said, just a short drive away from where your home base is, Fariba. But this preceded, we should mention, the murder of high-profile journalist Jamal Khashoggi. And here in the U.S., a lot of times we pronounce it Khashoggi, but it's Khashoggi. and I hope I nailed that. This high profile murder definitely drew the world's attention, condemnation from many countries. There was also this investigation into, as you said, into who was really responsible. And now a UN official who determined that Saudi Arabia was responsible for that 2018 murder on Turkish soil is making comments about the Barakat double murder. Tell us about that.
Right. So what we did is we took our findings and we took them to her. Agnes Callamard, she investigates extrajudicial killings, so assassinations and things that need to be dug further outside of a specific country. She handles these things, and she has quite a lot of resources and power in order to do that. Now, countries, when she goes inside a country, they don't necessarily have to cooperate with her, but often because it is the UN, they feel obliged to do so. Otherwise, it would be really bad PR for that country. In the Khashoggi case, it was easy for her because she had Turkey's cooperation. And for her to take on a case and say, I'm going to investigate this, she has to see a lot of evidence that whatever the country like Turkey says isn't accurate, isn't right. So for her to take this on, it was a big deal because she has dozens of cases and maybe even hundreds where she's looking at and saying, no, this does not deserve my attention. But she did with this one. And the main reason, I think, is because there was just no motive whatsoever. And she talks about that with ABC and with Reveal. She mentions how she became interested in this story based on what we presented her, because it didn't seem all the pieces of the puzzle were not fitting. So it called for her attention and for this investigation to continue. Now, she has not concluded her investigation, so we are also waiting for that to follow up to see what if the Turkish government responds to her, because they have not responded to us. Other than the court translator who talked to us, no one else has gotten back to us, and we've tried.
And there have been, there has been outreach by the Barakat family, Suzanne Barakat, you mentioned, also based in the U.S., based in the Bay Area, who has been agitating for some sort of action, some sort of investigation at the highest levels of American government. How has that gone for the family?
Well, in our investigation, we were able to get Congressman Price from North Carolina, where Hala was from, to basically say that this needs to be prioritized. This was an American journalist. How come we just brushed it under the rug? This family deserves justice. They deserve answers. Yes, it happened in Turkey, but it's the FBI's responsibility to investigate when an American citizen is killed abroad. That's happened in the past. Why not this time? And also the State Department. The State Department, when they put out the press release that Hala was killed, they misspelled their names. They didn't even say she was an American citizen. There was just so much neglect on this. My colleague James Meek calls this the forgotten American. She was the forgotten American. And there's ample evidence to prove that. And it's tragic, not just because these women were murdered, but also because after their murder, nobody seemed to care. Mm. And they were doing some really amazing work. They were putting themselves out there. These women were just full of heart, full of ideals for justice. The more I got to know them through my investigation, the more I was convinced that their work had something to do with the way that they were killed.
And the after lack of attention afterward, that's what I meant to say. Do you think that is related not just to the Islamophobia that may exist here in the U.S., but also perhaps to the fact that these were women? And somehow of course it was domestic violence, some might say, because that's what happens sometimes. Do you think that is at play here in why this case is not getting the recognition and attention that it deserves?
Of course. I mean, I've mentioned this over and over, even here when I talk to American journalists and British journalists, and they kept telling me, but they weren't important enough to be killed. I heard that so many times, even from their own opposition colleagues. Their work wasn't important enough. They were not known enough to be killed for their work. And that just bothered me, because if it had, I feel like if they had been men, it would have been on a different scale. And even, let's just say it was a femicide. It was a domestic violence killing. It was an American woman. Why didn't our government take this up? Why did they?
Could they have extradited him for that to stand trial here?
They could have. They could have if they had made a big enough deal out of it. What they did was take the easy route. And in fact, they didn't even open an investigation on their own, even though the family was pushing for it. And they really tried hard. Suzanne tried in the U.S. The family here tried with the U.S. Embassy and the consulate. And all they got was one phone call to one of Hala's friends to discuss what evidence, what physical evidence had been found. It seems to me that they don't even have the information that we collected, because they just sort of, in the FBI statement that was given to me initially and then afterwards, is like, we trust that the Turkish National Police has the expertise to handle this matter.
But yet we saw what happened with the investigation with Jamal Khashoggi.
Exactly.
There we go. Okay. We are continuing the conversation with Fariba Nawal. We need to take another break. Sorry for all the breaks, Fariba. We know that this is not the easiest thing for you to join us by phone from Istanbul, but a very important investigation that's taken place. It's a joint investigation between ABC News and the Center for Investigative Reporting, the Reveal Department, as part of that. And it has already been part of a Nightline episode, but it is also part of a podcast. We encourage folks to listen to that after our discussion if they're intrigued and want to learn more. When we come back, we're going to talk about specifically, and it is a delicate subject, but it's one that needs to be tackled, the wounds that were described in one area as being multiple stab wounds, and in others were described as being singular and done with military precision. And the discrepancy and the questions that arise out of that discrepancy. That's coming up here on The Extra on KRDO News Radio. And welcome to The Extra, the show that connects you with issues, topics, and people that are important to you. And some who are listening right now might question why we are devoting an entire hour of our airtime to a case that happened across the globe on the other side of the world. Well, this happened to a journalist, and I'm a journalist, and I can say the worst that I've ever faced in my own journalism career was getting arrested for covering a story. Thank you, Portland Police, for that. But it was an arrest, and I was not in fear of my life. And what we've seen with this case, as has been raised, the questions that have been raised by the work of journalist Fariba Nawal and her colleagues in putting together this collaborative investigative report called Justice for Hala, is that a journalist was, it seems, murdered for her work. And it was a murder of an American journalist. And as is mentioned in your report, Ms. Nawal, the murder of journalists is an ultimate act of censorship. And Hala herself had some very chilling words to share on that subject, did she not?
Yes, she did. She was helping Kayla Mueller. If your listeners remember, she was an American who was kidnapped by ISIS, and she was friends with Hala at the time. And Kayla Mueller was kidnapped, and eventually she was killed in a very high-profile murder by the leader of ISIS, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. And at the time, Aruba and Hala were trying to get the U.S. Embassy to pay attention to the case before it went international, and to contact them and tell them how Kyla was doing on the ground. And in this interview with her parents that we got access to, she basically says, I guess, you know, Kyla was this beautiful human being who came here to help, and I guess her truth died with her. And Hala was, you know, that when I listened to that, I just felt there was just, you know, that moment of shock of, wow, this was such a premonitory statement. She was sort of, a few weeks later, she herself was dead, you know? And when you do I've worked in places like Afghanistan and Iraq and Iran, and when you go to places like this as an American, you take the risk. You're taking the risk, but at the same time, you're hoping that your own government will stand up for you if something does happen. And in this case, that's not the case. But what happened with Hala that when we interviewed an intelligence defector from the Syrian regime, he was telling us that the Assad regime was their number one targets were the media activists and the journalists. Because if you kill a journalist, you are able to basically get rid of the power that they have with so many of these protesters and sort of this fear of social media and the fear and power of the media that the Assad regime had back then. So a lot of these interviews that we did pointed to, the Assad regime, but we don't have, we were not able to get a body of evidence that would prove that they did it. There is nothing like that. Yeah.
But in the autopsy report, there is a discrepancy between the fatal wounds that both women reportedly suffered as described in the autopsy report, and then as described by the lead prosecutor. What was that discrepancy? I find it very, that multiple stab wounds are described by one, whereas a single slice to the throat is described by another.
Exactly. So the report itself is contradictory. So the autopsy report and the prosecutor's report, and one report says it was slaughter style, which means there's one cut to the throat, and the other report says there are multiple stab wounds. Now, we spoke to the aunt who washed the bodies. In our tradition, in our Muslim tradition, a family member washes the bodies before they're buried, and she saw and she observed what she saw, and she's convinced that what she saw was just one stab wound. And so, again, it's another discrepancy. Why? Why? It begs, we have to ask that question over and over, and we are not getting any answers.
Fariba Nawa, an Afghan-American journalist who's worked diligently for 2 years to put together this report. Tell us what the toll has been on you personally as a journalist covering this.
This took longer than we had expected, partly because of the pandemic. We really had to slow down our investigation. And for me, the biggest problem when I do these stories that take such a long time is that the family members are waiting for it to come out, hoping that it will make a difference, it will make an impact. And it was really hard to watch the family suffer through this wait. And also just to see them, I mean, these women were so loved. And every person that I spoke to, whether it was a classmate or a colleague, had nothing but good things to say about them. And this story took me to outside a Turkish prison, to the crime scene itself, as well as inside many Istanbul cafes where, as I wrote on social media, people whispered, they speculated, they cried. So I spoke to dozens of people, from attorneys to colleagues to journalists who knew them. And, I became kind of, I would have dreams about it, right? When you're so engrossed in a story, it becomes part of your everyday life. I felt like one of those detectives who should get a bulletin board with yellow notepads and just try to solve this somehow.
And string leading from one clue to the next, right?
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I guess there was this sort of deep disappointment that we didn't get the accountability that we had hoped for at the end, but yet we did get Agnes Callamard to start an investigation. And for us, that is huge because that could bring the answers that we need. Okay. I have, I tried to turn over every rock in Turkey, but there are some that I haven't, and I can still move forward with that. It became a security risk toward the end, because I'm also a journalist living here. And the life for journalists in Turkey, especially Turkish journalists, is not easy. You might have heard this is a country that jails journalists very easily. They don't assassinate them anymore. They don't, they often they are released, but they are jailed without due process or without a real reason, often just because they have a different political perspective. For foreign journalists, it's a lot easier. I'll say that. I don't face the same kind of dangers. But in this case, because it's possible that there were accomplices to this and they're roaming free here in Turkey and Istanbul, I took a step back recently, and I don't know if I'll move forward. I'd like to see what Agnes Callamard comes out with next.
Okay. Well, we have been fascinated to listen to this. We'd like to thank Fariba Nawa, the journalist who participated in this ABC News and Reveal investigative collaboration. And as we mentioned, you can listen to the podcast. I'm going to post the link on our own podcast page so you can click through and follow that in order to listen to more in-depth reporting on the murders of Hala and Aruba Barakat and the search for justice for Hala. And Fariba, thank you so much for lending us your expertise, for giving us the background on this long investigation that was, it sounds like, frustrating at many turns, but hopefully gets closer to the truth.
Thank you for having me. I hope so, too.
This is The Extra.